Everyone, you've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and who are the Paradigm Shifters? What are Paradigm Shifters? For me, it's people that are making a difference on the planet and in the collective at this huge shift time in human history. And my Paradigm Shifter today is very exciting. She's actually a good friend of mine and is really making the waves shake right now. Her name is Nadia McCaffrey. And Nadia has started a series of veterans villages, sustainable villages, for to help veterans sort of relocate in the kind of reality that can be healing and sustainable within itself. And I want Nadia to tell you more about her story than I'm going to bother telling. Nadia, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Honey. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm just so pleased to hear what's going on, and your website is veteransvillage.org for people who want to look it up. And tell us briefly what it is that these veterans villages are.
Well, it goes back a long way. Approximately 15 years ago, I started talking about building centers. But I wasn't sure what the center would be for, who exactly. And along the line, my son was killed in Iraq in 2004. And after that, in 2006, I decided to help veterans. Why? Because they started to come to me directly. I'm not sure for the reason, but they just came, needed help. So I started to look into be the best way to do that and created something. It started with somebody called Stephen Edward, and he called me at 3 o'clock in the morning. He was suicidal. He was in the middle of a huge breakdown, was afraid to have his family, close himself in his bedroom, pick up the phone and call me. I understand that I had to take him out of there as fast as possible. So we directed
was,
him.
Was he, had he just come back from Iraq?
He just got back from Iraq. He actually served with my son, yes.
I see.
And he, I mean, the situation was more than critical. But at, in the middle of the night, I had to find a solution. And the best thing that came to me is to get a ticket and find where we had a retreat at this time, a spiritual retreat. And we found it. We found something in Oregon, actually, that was held by Claude Ancient Thomas. Claude Ancient Thomas is a Buddhist monk, but he also is a Vietnam vet who was wounded 3 times and is suffering and has suffered all his life from PTSD. And he has now devoted his life in creating retreats around the country helping veterans.
Oh, wow. And you just stumbled on that? Or
yeah.
You just...
Well, no, I kind of met people... People just came to me, you know, 1, 2, 3, just fall into place. up until I realized this was what I was supposed to do.
And so did he like it? He went off to the spiritual retreat. This monk sounds really interesting, too. So in his, what kind of a monk was he, Tibetan Buddhist?
He was born in the States. He was never much of a either a religious or spiritual person. He was a soldier, basically, and suffering from this PTSD that he could not get a hold of, you know, staying in control of, he met one day Thich Nhat Hanh. And Thich Nhat Hanh, as you probably know, also helps veterans. He is a peace warrior, always has been since Vietnam. And he also has retreats, and he has quite a few tools, really, to work with PTSD. So one after the other, he realized that this was very peaceful and did work, in fact. So he, Claude Enchantant has decided, with Thich Nhat Hanh's influence, to become a monk himself, and he did.
As a solution for PTSD, maybe you better just give a little thumbnail on what PTSD is for.
Yes, it's well. PTSD stands for post-traumatic syndrome. It's something that you don't have to suffer from going to war. You can have PTSD if you lose somebody from a bad experience, I mean, like an accident, a murder, something that will, a bad experience, you know, that you suffer terribly from. You can get out of this experience with suffering from PTSD. But there is such a thing also as combat PTSD, which is typical to war syndrome. And this form of PTSD is very acute. Why? Because soldiers, of course, visualize and witness things that we don't have any idea of. I probably know more than some people because of the confidence that I receive from some soldiers. But frankly, we don't have any idea what they go through and survive from. So those who have survived and suffer from all of this, and many, many times, the trauma is also with suffering from PTSD is one thing. But if, in case of Steve, for example, he was his Humvee blew on a roadside bomb, and he was ejected from it, he was knocked out, but finally ended up standing up and walking away, and they told him he was okay. In fact, he had TBI, which is traumatic brain injury. It could be mild or more severe. In his case, it was mild, but nobody knew of it. And all these things, you know, accumulated, endangered his life. He ended up coming home.
But wait, when they have those things, then their reactions can be suddenly and impossibly out of control, can't they?
Yes, PTSD, combat PTSD, is triggered by a noise. It could be triggered by somebody screaming, a scent, a voice, a car going too fast. You know, things that they have lived through in Iraq or Afghanistan.
So their reaction comes out, and maybe they would shoot somebody?
Yes, absolutely, because these things, when this happens, what happens is they have what you call flashback, and they see pictures of scenes of that they have lived through, and they don't realize they lost touch with reality here and believe really that they are in Iraq. One young man from Texas a few months ago almost killed his mother because he was just back from Iraq, and all the family was together. It was a happy day, you know, everybody brought something for him. They were really celebrating his return, and he was happy too. He had a wife and a baby of 18 months, I think. You know, everything seems to be perfect. And in the middle of the dinner, he ran off from his from the table and his chair, and started to punch, push his mother down. She was in the kitchen. He tried to push her down on the floor. And what he was trying to do, he was trying to protect her, in fact. He thought he was in the middle of a battlefield, and he wanted her to go on the ground so she wouldn't get hit.
So the flashbacks are literally
right.
Visual.
Yes. Oh, and, of course, she ended up being bruised.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody panicked. People left. Nobody understood what was happening to him. When he finally came to and realized what he had done, he just had a breakdown. He just became depressed, and he left. He just picked up a coat, and he just left the house.
Hmm.
He just started to wander. And this is also another thing. When they leave like this, it's for many reasons, because they want to protect their family. They certainly don't want to hurt their family.
Hmm.
And one way to avoid this is to leave, even if it's nowhere, just in the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where big trouble happened, because, of course, drinking, drugs, you know. You know, happen, and sometimes it's too late to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was going through your website, and it talks about, what is it, like 15% seem to commit suicide over time. And
yeah.
What is the percentage of homeless people that are vets? It's humongous, isn't it?
What could you repeat this?
Well, I was just seeing this. Well, when you're talking about PTSD,
yes,
and we're talking about vets, I'm going, it is so dire inside of them that they, many of them become homeless, or many of them,
yeah,
commit suicide. This is a really huge, terrible pain and injury, isn't it?
It is. It's something that you don't heal. People think that you can heal PTSD. You really don't heal PTSD. It doesn't go away. What you can do with it is learn how to live with it, how to control it, how to understand it.
So let's go back to the villages. Is there a special understanding of how to help these people in the context of their lifestyle, sustainable agriculture, and so on?
Yes. Yes. Quite a while back, it's just in 2006, I was on national television speaking about my son, and I shift the focus from Patrick McCaffrey, my son, to the veteran. Because by then, quite a few of them had come to me for help, and I did what I could to help them, which was pretty successful, really, but not enough. And what I thought of doing after the experience with Steve was to buy a farm, or somebody donate a farm, and to start having a few and let them grow their own food, let them live, you know, veteran with veteran, and to teach them how to become self-sustained, self-sufficient. It works.
Mm-hmm.
So I just...
Does it calm the brain? Does it help the brain pattern?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Myself, when I get stressed, I like to go in a little patch of roses in front of the house and pull the weeds, because I can think.
Mm-hmm.
I can think very clearly. It has a very therapeutic effect, and it's just peace, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the reverse of war.
Mm-hmm.
You plant a seed, you watch the seed grow, and here it is. You create it. You're responsible for that seed, for the plant, for the fruit, or whatever is going to come out of it. War is the reverse of this. You destroy.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump. There's so much. You're so involved with so much. It's incredible. Can we move back to your incredible loss of Patrick and what you did? Because that really changed things for all kinds of people waiting for the children to come home from Iraq,
yeah,
didn't it?
It did.
Mm-hmm.
Still does. Well, you came to the celebration.
Yes, I did.
Of life that we had in Livermore. I was in shock, you know. It took me a long time to realize that Patrick was not coming back. But amazingly enough, when I received a phone call that Patrick was shot multiple times and killed, I was in...
He was your only child, right?
He was my only child, yes.
Right.
And my universe. But anyway, I was in 29 Palm, visiting a friend, a dear friend of mine, who was in the process of dying, and she had sent someone to come and be with her. So I was, in fact, in a hospital with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew Patrick. And
Some of your work is hospice work anyway, isn't it?
Yes. For almost 20 years, I work with Angel Staff, which, you know, was my organization training volunteer to be at the bedside of people at the end of life, just a loving presence, caring presence, and helping through the process. I started that with Danion Brinkley, with Compassion in Action.
Oh.
Many years ago.
Danion Brinkley. Was that before he got hit by lightning?
No, after. Yeah.
I don't mean to be cheeky, but it's an interesting sequence, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
So you received the phone call.
Yeah. And I don't exactly remember what happened then, but my daughter-in-law couldn't speak, so an officer that was at the house here in Tracy told me, you know, that very coldly and calmly, but you have to do it this way, I guess, said that, ma'am, I have the regret to say that your son, Patrick Ryan McCaffrey, was shot and killed multiple times at 10:45 or 11:45 this morning. In Balad, Iraq, in an ambush. Okay, so I had my cell phone. When I came to, I have a blank here. I don't remember exactly what I did. I think I screamed. But I was on the floor, curled up like a fetus, and I was holding tight on the phone. And tears were coming down my face. And I had a circle of people around me because, again, it was a hospital. So when I realized that, I just picked up myself and came to the bed, hugged my friend, and left. Went in the car and started to drive 8 hours to the house. And 8 hours driving was good because I cried the whole time, but I had time to try to understand what just had happened here, that my life as I know it, or I live it until that day was over. You know, something just vanished. Yeah. And coming home, the whole family was there, and not knowing what to do, so I started to decide thanks with everybody and so on. I lay down for approximately an hour and a half on top of my bed, my eyes wide open, couldn't sleep, of course. And then I hear this loud voice, very loud voice of Patrick, of my son, saying, Mom, get up. Just get up. And Lucky getting patience with me sometimes, he would say, just get up. They are coming. What? Okay, I didn't even think. You know, he's dead. It can't be him. Okay, I just got up. I didn't think. I walk in the living room, in the bedroom, knock on doors, and I just repeated what he said. I said, just get ready. They are coming. I had no idea who was coming. Okay, no idea. 8 o'clock sharp, somebody knock on the door, and I opened the door, and there was a line of media down the street, satellite truck, television, media, whatever. I mean, I almost shut the door right back. But I realized that I couldn't do that. So for almost a whole week, I had people at the house talking about Patrick. And after a couple of days, the media, for the television especially, started to ask me, do you want us to come with you to the airport to welcome your son home? And I knew, of course, there was a ban forbidding the flag-draped coffin to be photographed or filmed. You know, that couldn't be done. And I said yes. I didn't think twice. I said yes. I want you to be there. I want people to know who Patrick was. So from that day on, I got a title. The media was there. It was the Patrick arrival in his coffin was all over the world. It was.
My understanding was that they didn't even allow the coffins to come into public airports before. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. But you changed that.
Well, yeah, not the whole thing, but I certainly. I don't know if people remember this, but I couldn't believe what happened after that. I mean, it was on every channel, everywhere. La Pravda, the Russian newspaper, had it. The German had it. The Japanese had it. I mean, it was everywhere. In Korea and Philippines. I couldn't believe it, you know? And all I did was tell Patrick's story, who he was, what he did, why he did what he did.
But you also insisted that his coffin come back in through the Sacramento airport in public,
yes.
Did you not?
Yes.
Yes. And also, here's the other question. Do you feel that Patrick was doing something then? He was creating some of this, and he was really fomenting some of the charisma of it all?
Yeah, I know. You know, Patrick was very intuitive himself. He was very, very spiritual. Before leaving, he knew he was not coming back. He really did.
Did he say that to you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. His will, and we talked, you know, we talked very openly. And we were, both of us, by the house the night before, and we have a lot of ravens here, and crow as well. And for some reason, they were holding a tree across the street, flying around and noisy and so on. So he looked and he smiled and he said, "Mom, if I come back, I'll be one of those.
Mm.
And so I can be around you and the children all the time." But the same day, before he was deployed, my granddaughter at the time was very much attached to watching one film, and it was The Lion King. You remember The Lion King?
Yes,
everybody
she does.
Does. Mm-hmm. And she and her dad were sitting on the bed watching The Lion King one more time. And the moment of where The Lion King is being killed, which is kind of an ambush, if you remember.
Yes.
My granddaughter, Janessa, grabbed her dad very, very tight and around his neck and said, "Daddy, Daddy, that's you."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So she knew, bless her heart. Was she about 2 or 3?
She was two and a half.
Oh.
Yeah. And she kept repeating that. And Patrick panicked. He just came to me, ran in the kitchen, and said, "Mom, you know what she told me?" And he told me, and I said, "Well, sweetie, she's just a baby, you know." And she said that like she could say, but he knows. I could see in his eyes.
Did you not want to stop him? I bet you did.
Of course I wanted to stop him.
But you can't, can you?
But Patrick was very, you know, when he realized he was going to be deployed, he enlisted the day after 9/11,
mm-hmm.
okay? And he enlisted because of 9/11. He was 34 years old when he was killed. He was not a very, very young man. And he had a very good position in life. He was making just under $100,000 a year. He had a new house, 2 car. But, you know, he had a good life.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he do that?
Mm-hmm.
But he did because he was a patriot.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't thought that he would be deployed to Iraq to be killed.
Mm-hmm. He was in the reserves, right?
He enlisted with the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, he became the first National Guard to have been killed since Korea. That's
mm-hmm.
why the newspaper and he made news,
mm.
you know. So
was a murder. Was a bounty hunting, wasn't it?
What it exactly was, because there was a cover up for 2 years with the Pentagon and the military. But they refused to give me the official report and the autopsy report, and I wanted to know everything about my son. So after I raised some heck, I contacted Senator Boxer, who contacted other senators, and finally they didn't have a choice but to come to my house. General Lindemann himself came to give me the official report and the autopsy report. And that's how the news became official. It was all over the news again.
Hmm.
That, yes, in fact, Patrick and Andre Tyson were both killed by the same Iraqi soldier from the Iraqi army, not our army, that they were training, shot and killed them in an ambush.
So Patrick was training the guys that shot him?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's sort of interesting, isn't it?
There was quite a few attempts of killing the American. That was not the first time.
Mm.
But nobody wanted to talk about it because this was the time where General Petraeus was telling everyone in the news that, everything was going according to plan, that the Iraqi army was ready to take over, and, so it was a very bad time
mm-hmm.
to officially recognize that something like this has happened.
So when you were, for example, took, insisted that his coffin be brought in public, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All of that has had a huge impact on others coming back, has it not?
Yes, it did change quite a few things, but the Bush administration would not change anything. However, people started to call me the woman or the mother who defied the Bush administration. Well, in fact, to me, it was not a defiance to the government. It was something that, as a mother, I wanted done.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want my son to come home in a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he left in the morning for Iraq. He had a big smile on his face. He was not hiding. Why the heck was I supposed to hide him when he come home?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it made a huge difference because it was a bit of cloak and dagger that you refused to allow any longer.
Well, that's right. But, mm-hmm. I said it. They asked me, but you know about the ban. Why did you do this? And yes, I did know about the ban. But this is my son.
Mm-hmm. I know every time we turned on the TV, there you were.
Yes.
Now, you also got involved from that. Got a lot of attention and, I would say, a terrific amount of respect from all over the world. And can you talk a little bit about the global peace initiatives that you encountered and what that was all about? And did that make any difference? Because obviously you were pulled into the peace world from then on. I mean, you were talking about peace, were you not?
Yes, of course. I'm a peaceful person. I'm not for any war.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in France in 1945, before the end of Second World War,
mm.
a few months before the end, but a few months before the end. And I grew up in the aftermath of war. So my grandfather was in both wars. I mean, no, I'm not in favor of any war. But, you know, we were, and there was, what I ended up is saying publicly what the way I felt, and, I thought it was enough. I was pretty naive in my thinking in some ways. I thought that...
It's probably a good thing. Hmm?
Well, I thought by making enough noise and talking loud enough and talking to as many people as possible that we could, with a big peace movement, a strong peace movement, maybe stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, was I wrong, wasn't I?
Yep.
But anyway, I tried, and from one step to the next, just after Patrick was killed, there was one thing I wanted to do. I wanted to travel to Iraq, and I wanted to see where he was shot, the place he died. In order to do this, I couldn't do it on my own. I had to find somebody who would organize such a trip, if that existed. It did, so I did. I joined, and we couldn't, unfortunately. I was followed by four other parents who also had lost a child at war. Actually, one of the people, mother, had lost a child the day of 9/11. He was a firefighter, and he died in a tower.
Mm.
So she joined, and my second goal was to meet with Iraqi mothers. But not any Iraqi mother. I wanted to meet people who, like me, had lost someone at war or because of the war, children, and sometimes the whole family. I just wanted to share the pain. I just wanted to try to understand why, you know, this whole thing was happening. And, you know, that's something that I wanted to do.
Hmm.
And I did. Because we couldn't travel to Iraq at that time, people came from Iraq to Amman in Jordan, and we met in a big hotel where we were staying. The first day, only a few people were there. And then after 5 or 6 days, we had a room filled with Iraqi, mainly women and children.
Mm.
And they share, all, each one of them share their experiences, pictures, some had videotapes. It's something that I never will forget. Never.
And they were both sides of the, in quotes, war. Right?
Yes. If you can picture a conference room,
mm-hmm.
with a big table, people sitting around it, and everybody, the way they had it, we arranged it, one American mother would tell her story and one Iraqi mother would. And at the end, it was, at the beginning, there was a lot of friction, mm-hmm. of course, you know. It was difficult, not comfortable at all. But after people realized that we were here because of our pain, mm-hmm. because of trying to understand the purpose of the suffering, trying to make a difference, trying to tell the world that, you know, we are mothers, and if we lose a child, the pain is the same. I don't care what color or what language you speak.
Right.
Or what religion you are from. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. A child is a child.
Right.
And this is what it was based on.
Mm-hmm. Did you make any close alliances with
them? Yes.
Good.
One of the women, mother that was there, had lost, oh gosh, so many people in her family, including a child. And she was an MD. She was a doctor, very well educated, very tough woman. And at first, you know, she would refuse to speak English. She spoke some English. She would refuse to speak English. And when I first told my story, she had a lot of criticism for me, which was fine. I was ready for this. You know, I was totally ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then as long as the day passed, 2 and 3, I was telling some of my feelings after watching and listening to some of the people who had heartbreaking stories to tell, and I was in tears that day, and you know, just said that I wished that I could do something to stop that pain.
Mm-hmm.
She actually got up from where she was and ran across the room to me, held me, and she was actually sobbing.
Oh.
And this was caught on tape. This is something that you can't, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Improvise. And this woman has done so much for children over there.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm in touch. There is a young nurse that traveled from Iraq for the first time in the U.S. and came to see me.
Hmm.
She was scared, but she wanted to see where I lived, how I lived, and we'll be friends for life.
Oh,
you know,
wonderful.
She's lost everybody except her mother.
Oh, my.
And she was one of the first people in Fallujah after the bombing to crawl between the rubble to pull children out of there.
Oh, my.
And those she couldn't get out of the hole, she got water and blankets and spent night and day trying to help.
Wow.
On her own.
Well, so I want to jump from there. That's a really deep place that touches
yeah.
me. But jumping from there to Global Peace Initiative, do you think that there's any effective peace initiatives that you knew about? This is a wonderful kind of round table that puts us back into the humanity, the love of our families, right?
Yes. And yes, it's about family, absolutely.
Yes. And is there any kind of peace initiative that you recommend that the global one?
We need to, I think, each one of us many of the people already have elevated their consciousness to a level that will make a difference and is making a difference. And as I always thought, you know, love will always make a difference, not bombs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the more we love each other and care for each other, the more this consciousness is going to get thick, like mm-hmm. a net around this earth,
mm-hmm.
and change things.
You think the internet is helping people get into a space of oneness with each other?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I think so,
yes.
So let's jump back into the Veterans Village, because I'm very excited about that. And I want you to talk about how it's being funded and how it, you know, tell us about how it seems to have a life of its own.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, like I said, I started the idea in 2006 on national television, and then from that day, people have been in touch, trying and wanting to help. Many, many people have contacted me just to volunteer and do this and do that for the soldier, you know, for the veteran coming home. And at first, and even now, I just tell them if we don't have anything close by, just go to the nearest VA, take a good look, and volunteer there.
Mm.
you know, you have them all over the country right now. Mm-hmm. What happened just after this is that one day I was speaking in Sebastopol, California, and a man, older man, came to me and said, I have your first center. Come and see me, give me his card, and we'll talk. So I did, and he was a veteran himself from the Second War, and he was also an engineer. And he, what he did, he wanted to donate a building in a place called Guerneville. It was a brand-new building, four-story tall,
mm-hmm.
Just a magnificent, a very good place for what we wanted to do. What we had in mind was to have a farm in the Sebastopol area,
mm-hmm.
and this building would have been lodging for the veterans. So they could live at a house there and go to work at the farm in the morning. The farming system is emerge with the farm idea itself. And if you look right now, many of our farmers are in trouble. You know, they are going through difficult times,
right.
like many others.
Mm-hmm.
But especially the farmer. I mean, if we don't pay attention to our farmers, where is our food coming next
mm-hmm.
from?
But this whole agribusiness has been a...
Yeah, but this is not, it cannot go on the way it is.
No.
We all know that.
I know.
So the thing is to reestablish organic farming, family farming, as it once was. That's the only way that we're going to have to survive. You know, and anyway, the point is that reestablishing the system of family farming will go very well because the farmer being in trouble, opening their door to the veteran, who are also in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the veteran would have a peaceful time being at a farm, helping the farmer, or learning how to become a farmer. And for this, we now have established some scholarships, different places in the country, mm-hmm. where the young veteran can go and study how to become a new farmer.
And learn about sustainability and all
exactly,
of that.
Exactly, green. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
The only way to go to, is to be completely green on everything mm-hmm. that we do.
So is there funding for like educating them to do this,
yes.
or are they being just taught by the farmers?
Both.
And
both. It's hands-on and going to school at the same time.
Okay.
And it's very practical because it fulfills two things, the veteran and the farmer.
Mm-hmm. What about the PTSD part?
That's also a very healing way to do. You see, the retreat that I spoke of at first from Claude Anshin Thomas happened in a redwood. The one that Steve was sent to was in a redwood in the middle of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did, he would take the veterans for long walks and teach them how to meditate, how to control their breathing, how to understand anger and why it flares up without any noticing, learning how to control all of that, and mainly to understand why.
And they can actually change their brain
yes.
patterning if they get calm enough and use
exactly.
breathing and consciousness, right?
Yeah. And feeling good. So anyway, the earth, where the peace is right there
hmm.
in the land.
Hmm.
And if one has a breakdown in the middle of a big field, what's the big deal?
Hmm.
He's going to be walking with other vets who understand why the breakdown.
So, Natty, are you finding that young vets or vets coming back or actually calling in a state of distress like your friend Stephen did, you're able to get them immediately to one of these places?
Oh, we'll find places, yes, definitely.
Okay.
But when people get to me, usually by phone, it's because they don't have any place to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the road. I am the end of the road.
Well,
it's
sounds
really
like you're
hard,
the beginning of a whole village road.
Yeah, but you see, it's very difficult for a veteran to ask for help
mm-hmm.
or even to recognize that they need help.
Mm-hmm.
But so when they call me, well, that's it. I better find something. And I can do this across country. You know, we just have somebody in Virginia right now, a young vet, who has PTSD, was becoming violent with his family, had to leave. So he lost everything, his house, his wife, the family, his children, his work, because he started to drink. and now he's living in the back room in a church somewhere. What he wants to do is to get into a program with the VA, which they have excellent program for his PTSD and counseling and substance abuse control. So after this, this is where the Veterans Village will come in. They can step into this and recycle themselves in some ways. Because one thing, too, they leave as one person and return as another. The soldier who has left home to war is gone forever. The person who returns is somebody else.
So in these villages, you have, if I read it all, I didn't read all of it, I read a lot of it. You have holistic and alternative clinics.
That's it. We are not offering any medical care.
Okay.
The VA does that.
Okay. And so it's alternative clinics, which are really, they kind of round the people and they use what, diet and...
Anything healthy, and there are so many ways. You know, so many good things are out there. And
so who can help? How can the people listening get involved? How can people help with this? And
well,
sounds like it's going to be a network that isn't just about vets, ultimately.
No. On the long run, it's going to be for people.
Right.
And
the changing dynamics of our economic world
exactly,
right now.
Yeah. It's part of it.
Yeah.
It's a big part of it. We lost touch with our roots. We lost the real way of being, and when I say real, I mean healthy and truthful and respectful to the earth. We have lost that. I mean, how many people that are listening today or that you know, if we give them tomorrow 5 acres of land by a stream of water with a shovel and a shack, are they going to survive?
I don't know. I think some would not.
Yeah. That's what we need to make sure that people can survive from the earth and respect the earth back.
It's a very, very interesting project. So back to how can people help, Nadia? How can people get involved, or how can people even use your facilities? What would you recommend?
We are in the building process right now.
Okay.
We have chapters, different places. For example, we're going to open something in June in, Humboldt, California.
Okay.
There is close to 20 acres of land there that a vet is leading, and he is very spiritual, so he's going to have retreats. And it's also one thing that we also, that I didn't mention so far, we don't focus only on the veteran himself or herself. We focus on the families.
Okay.
So many of them are divorced because of the war.
I was going to ask you if you're incorporating the wives.
Oh,
spouses.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of the big things. Because, again, like I said, when the soldier comes back, man or woman, the spouse does, if the spouse has not been at war, even if it had been, they don't understand each other anymore.
Right.
And that's
scary.
Why...
It's scary and incendiary,
yes.
Isn't it? Yeah.
So we need to not just educate, but create this circle of people who will work with each other. And the next one that will be opening is the big one in Big Center in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
It's Minnesota is going to become the national center.
Mm-hmm.
It was built in 1900. It first was built for a school that served unwed mothers. And at the time, it was a self-sustained farm, organic farm. So we are going to tune it back into that, to restore, to reestablish the farming that this farm had once had.
And was this donated?
We are in process of raising the money. We have made 2 trips to Washington, D.C. We are contacting a lot of people for financing it. We have a special group of people in Minnesota that are veterans from Vietnam mainly, and were combat vets, and are totally devoted into helping other veterans. And they also have run some big enterprise and some big corporation. They have the experience, and they know people, and they are working it now. So it's, and the owner, the people who own this big campus, who has 23 buildings, is also coming to Washington for the next trip we're going to have, and contacting not just Congress and Senate people, but also corporations that give money to nonprofit like us. So we are doing it now.
So you, well, that's wonderful.
And I am. We are going to do a special trip to visit with Michelle Obama, but just people like me, Gold Star Mother. And Mary Tillman is part of the group. We have a ex-senator, former senator from Minnesota, who is also a Gold Star Mother, who is coming with us, and a third, a fourth Gold Star Mom from California.
What's a Gold Star Mom? Is that someone whose child died?
Oh, okay. When you have a son or daughter serving overseas at war, the family is a Blue Star, and
okay.
The mother is a Blue Star Mom. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if your son or daughter has been wounded overseas at war, you become a Silver Star family.
Mm.
Now, when, in case like me, my son was killed in combat, I receive a Gold Star from the government, and I am a Gold Star Mom.
Mm. So, I don't know what to say about that. So I guess there's quite a few of you, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you work together quite a bit?
Oh, we have a group. Yes, we have some good groups of people that... it's hard, you know. In my case, that's what I wanted to do immediately. I needed a purpose to survive this.
Mm-hmm.
First, you know, like I said, love is something that has to be dominating in your life,
right.
Not destruction, not negativity. So that's why I wanted to help anyway. And when the soldier came to me, then here it was. You know, it was right there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to look for it. It was here.
What do you see as the evolutionary, what do you think is happening with our species? Do you think we're going to evolve beyond war? I know you're clairvoyant, you're an intuitive, and I know you've got really amazing perceptions of what's needed and what's going on. Do you see evolution?
Yes, definitely, but we're not there yet.
No.
We have a long way to go.
So what can we all do? We'll have to sign off in a few minutes, but I want everybody to check your website, which is veteranvillage.org, and I think you've got some pointers in there of how people can take educated and responsible action, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. Read the story that we have in the website. There are a lot of heartbreaking stories, but also a lot of hope. And like I said many times, see, if you want to help, if you are, go to the veteran, go to the next VA, visit them. Just give them 5 minutes of their time, of your time, of your family's time. Listen to what they have to tell you. They need to talk. They need to let their story out. Nobody listens to them. You know, they feel alone. And how many times have I heard, nobody cares.
Wow.
Nobody give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
I hear this over and over, and I keep saying, no, we care. We are here, but we don't know what to do, okay? So the best first step is to approach them. Give them a hug.
Okay.
And if you know someone who has returned from the war, just go knock on the door, say, hey, welcome. I know you came back. We're your neighbor or whatever, and then just give a hug.
Good.
And just tell them, you're not alone. We're here to help.
So that's one of the most healing things in the world anyway, is actually seeing and knowing people. Inside, isn't it?
Yeah.
I really, what will I say? I've enjoyed this conversation. I've learned a lot, Nadia, and I certainly am going to keep abreast with all the things that you're talking about. You're a very, very inspiring woman. Oh, and do you know about the petition that's going around that's being taken into the Obama administration at their request? Led by some of the evolutionary leaders like Barbara Marks Hubbard and Greg Braden and Deepak Chopra and those people. They're aiming for 100,000 signatures to focus the administration on the evolution of our consciousness.
I definitely want to see this and sign it, too.
I shall send you a little link, my darling. It's thepetitionsite.com.
Okay.
That's where it is, and it's really a big deal, and I want to make sure that goes along with the amazing work you're doing, because I believe that we're able to prompt the consciousness to keep moving, aren't we?
Yes, we need to do that.
All right, my friend, it's wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much, and many, many blessings for all you're doing, and thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Honey.
All right, and everybody
Bye-bye.
Check veteransvillage.org. Meet Nadia McCaffrey. Bye-bye. Well, that was a very interesting and multifaceted story of reality, the real third-dimensional stuff that's going on and how we have to evolve beyond it and how we can help each other get there. So check out her website. This is Veronica Entwistle, and again, I'll be on Jackie's show Thursday night, hopefully interviewing her wonderful, amazing team and playing with Jackie, who in herself is amazing, insightful. Her thing is called Explorations in Consciousness. And email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, no H in Entwistle, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, if you have anything you want to talk about or if you'd like to have a session with me. In the meantime, I send out much love and many blessings, and see you on Thursday night. Good night.